and welcome again to the Ask Beattie Show. And I also really appreciate your being around. After all, there are actually hundreds and thousands of podcasts and shows and television shows. And I really appreciate your tuning in live every Monday afternoon from 3 to 4 and also going to the Progressive Radio Network archives. And I also really appreciate the emails and the comments. And I want you to know that the primary reason why I really love doing the Ask Beattie Show is that I hope that every single week that there is some little thing that I might say where you will have an aha moment which may motivate and inspire you to make some changes in your life that are really in your best interest. And in fact, yesterday it was so terrific. It was Sunday, and I had a patient who I had done family therapy with, and I had worked with her adult daughter. And she came in and she said, "You know, Beattie, I've been listening to the Ask Beattie Show now for the last couple of years, but I've only recently heard what you had to say about the importance of my doing things for myself." This is a woman who has saved the world. She's, done all kinds of things for her children and her husband and the business and the family and the cousins. And she's really kind of put her own needs and her own self on the back burner. And she wanted me to know that in listening to the show every single week, and this has been a long, long time. In fact, today is the 281st Ask Beattie Show here on the Progressive Radio Network. So she finally heard what I had to say, and I'm hoping that you all hear every week what I have to say about the importance of living our lives and living our relationships in a way that are really in our best interest. And I was thinking about the theme of the show. What is really the theme of the Ask Beattie Show? Well, it's to free ourselves. It's to free ourselves of the depression and the anxiety. And perhaps some of you are suffering from a variety of different substance abuse of various different kinds, to free yourself from the relationships that are not going as well as you might like. And freeing does not mean extricating necessarily. It does not mean exiting. But what it does mean is taking whatever steps are necessary, finally, to begin to acknowledge and address and resolve issues, even though, of course, we cannot change our history. So I was thinking about the freedom theme of the Ask Beattie Show. Naturally, it reminded me of Marla Thomas, "Free to Be You and Me," and I'm going to play this beautiful "Free to Be You and Me" lyrics right now. So take a listen and sing along with me. Absolutely, absolutely beautiful, beautiful song. In fact, it was a couple of years ago, my husband Jim and I, we were at an event in East Hampton, and there was Marlo Thomas and her husband Phil Donahue. And when I was the one of the directors of the school social services program in Greater Montreal, I used to play the record "Free to Be You and Me" to the children. And of course, the purpose of that was to free the children up and help them to be able to express a variety of different kinds of emotion, the gladness, the sadness, the pain, the disappointment, and of course to teach them to do all of this well. And you know, I was reading a piece in the New York Times, and the headline was "They're Mad as Hell." And who is mad as hell? Well, this was a group of women who were in their 60s and 70s, and they were actually looking back on their lives. And they had a lot of anger and a lot of upset about what did and didn't happen in their lives professionally and personally. And finally, they were able to really give themselves permission to vent about a variety of different issues that they had never before been able to express. And this is when I talk about unfinished business. And we all have unfinished business, or what I also call skeletons in the closet, primarily stemming from our own families of origin, or even unfinished business from a year ago, or 10 years ago, or 25 years ago. And when we have these issues that have not been resolved, again, even though we can't change what did happen or what did not happen in our previous lives, it's really important for all of us to find a way to emotionally process and be able to express feelings that we never gave ourselves permission to express previously. And it's so cathartic. And that is something that happens in my therapy sessions all the time, where people are walking around with an enormous amount of pain and depression and anger and upset and disappointment, perhaps at their parents or their siblings or their bosses or their friends. And it is so freeing. It is so freeing to finally be able to express all of the sentiments and all the emotions and all the feelings that so many people have put away in a drawer, as I used to say, just put under a carpet. And in denying and in avoiding expressing, the reality is that it always, always catches up to us. And when people continue over periods of time, and oftentimes over the period of years, to not express and to repress and to suppress feelings that are really getting in the way of their lives, in also their relationships, it's only a time before the pot really boils over. So I'm asking you now, here it is, it's almost the end of the year. And do you feel that you have some, and for some people, a lot of unfinished business that really needs to be looked at? Understanding, of course, that we cannot change. We cannot change our history. We cannot change our families. We cannot change anything that's happened even a second ago. And when you think about this, and when you ask yourself the question, are my hurts, are the disappointments that I have sustained in my life, the anger, the upset, are these things continuing to get in the way of my current life and my current relationships? And I think if we're honest with ourselves, the answer invariably is yes. And people will say, well, what good is it to express things that I cannot change? And all I can tell you, I've been practicing now for over 35 years, and it is the most freeing feeling that people can actually finally experience, that they are able to once and for all talk about the things, whether it's crying or expressing anger, that they have been suppressing and that they have been repressing, which frequently causes a lot of depression and anxiety. So if you're in that kind of a position right now in your life, maybe you're able to talk about these things with friends. Maybe you're able, if you're one of the lucky people, to be able to talk about some of these things, some of the hurts, some of the pains, disappointments with family members. But if you are not, I say this all the time, we do not need to navigate this world on our own. And frequently having some short-term therapy can really make all the difference in the world. Because what we don't want to do, we do not want to live our lives where we frequently have one foot in the past and one foot in the present. And when you're able to emotionally work through the skeletons in the closet and the unfinished business. It frees you. It really does free you to finally be able to live in the moment, live in the present, without having the clouds, without having one foot in the past and one foot in the present. So think about this. Think about this, whether or not this is the time of the year, and we're going to be starting a new year just in a couple of weeks, whether this is the time of the year for you to begin to finally, once and for all, deal with your unfinished business. Whether or not it's old depression, whether or not it's new depression. Because if we're looking at depression as an example, there are 16 million adults in the United States who are clinically depressed. 40 million adults are suffering from a variety of different anxiety disorders. And it's always about something. We don't just wake up one morning and we're feeling depressed or we're feeling anxious. It's always about something. And sometimes it's very, very difficult to figure out, why am I feeling so anxious? Why have I been waking up more and more and more feeling depressed? And sometimes just getting a second opinion from somebody who is qualified, from somebody who you can really learn to trust, it can make all the difference in the world, so that you're then able to be free to be able to move forward without the clouds and without the ghosts. What about your relationship? You know, I talk about this every week. Relationships under the best of circumstances are always, always challenging. And, you know, we have a divorce rate in this country of 48%, 67% divorce rate for second marriages, 74% divorce rate for third marriages. So if you're looking at your own relationship right now, and again, the perfect relationship does not exist. You have to ask yourself, you know, how are things really going? Are you relatively happy with your partner on a day-to-day basis, emotionally, physically, sexually? And hopefully you're one of these people who is on a really good run in your relationship, whether or not you're dating or whether or not you're married or living together. But if you're not, the real question then becomes, what are you going to do about this? Are you going to just look the other way? Are you going to hope that just by osmosis, your relationship and the relationship issues are somehow going to resolve themselves on their own? Or are you going to be brave? And it is a sign of bravery, whether or not you're reaching out and asking for help, or whether or not you are able to sit down with your partner and say, look, you know, I love you very much, but it seems as if we're just not really connected. And I want to do something about this. And a lot of people, I mean, I have treated people who've been married for years and years and years and have never been able to sit down and really have an honest conversation about the status and their state of the relationship. Of course, people then will have affairs, or people will drink too much, or people will find themselves in states of depression or anxiety. But then again, if you're dealing with unfinished business, and if you really want to be able to have a sense of freedom, we need to tackle the tough issues. Otherwise, years and years can go by where you're feeling so discontented and so disconnected. So today, hopefully, is going to be a day, whether or not you're talking about unfinished business, whether or not you're talking about relationship issues, whether or not you're talking about sexual problems, that you're no longer going to put all of these concerns and troubles and problems on the back burner, but that you are going to say to yourself, I deserve the best. I deserve better. And in acknowledging that to yourself, of course, you're going to have to take the steps, the necessary steps to actually do what is in your best interest. And if that means getting some short-term outside help, then give yourself permission to do that as well. It is absolutely not a weakness. It is a strength. And, you know, people who I have been working with for many, many years, all of them invariably have said, "We only wish we'd made the call earlier." And what about your lifestyle and your health and your diet? And Gary Nell, of course, talks about this every single day. And if we're looking at what is in our best interest, it's not just about our relationships. It's also about our lifestyle. Are we eating well? The fruits, the vegetables, the grains, the fish, the nuts. Are we getting enough sleep? Are we exercising? You know, for example, I have to make a confession here this morning. I woke up and I was feeling a little bit anxious, and it was like, okay, I have the show to do later on, and what am I going to do? So I prepared for the show, and fortunately, I have a lot of free weights in the apartment, so I started to lift some weights and did that for about 25 minutes, but still was not quite feeling on my game. So even though I didn't feel like doing this, I went to the gym and went on the elliptical at quite a good pace. And after about 25 minutes, I have to tell you, it was really wonderful. I felt a lot better. I felt a lot energized and took the metro to the Progressive Radio Network studio. And had I not done this, I think that I would have been feeling maybe anxious and sluggish. So was it something that I was actually wanting to do, lifting the weights and going to the gym and exercising? The answer was absolutely not. I would have rather just sat around and taken the train and got to the station. But I knew invariably that there were things that I need to do. And you know also invariably that there are things that you need to do that are in your best interest. So that does, of course, include eating well, and it does include exercising and weight training. And if you're somebody who's into yoga and meditation and massage and acupuncture, again, it's not about being selfish. In fact, the woman who I saw yesterday, she says, you know, Beanie, you talk about doing what is in our best interest. Is that not selfish? No, it is not selfish. It is not selfish to love yourself. It is not selfish to take good care of yourself. It doesn't mean that you are going to abandon everybody in your life. But if we are not in a good place, and of course I talk about this so much when I talk about people's ability to be able to have and maintain and sustain healthy relationships, because the bottom line really is that if each of us is not in a good place emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically, what good are we to other people? So no, it is not being selfish. It is just important that as we navigate all of the various activities that we are involved in our lives on a daily basis, that we ask ourselves the question, and I ask every single patient who leaves my office after our therapy, whether or not they are going to be willing to be mindful as they go about their days, as they go about their interactions with other people, whether or not they are behaving in ways that are actually in their best interest. And that's an exercise I think that all of us should be doing on a very, very regular basis. And if we find that, as an example, that we're saying yes when we mean no, and we're saying no when we really mean yes, and if we find that we are really engaging in self-sabotaging and self-destructive and destructive behavior, we have to make a decision. We have to make a decision whether or not we are going to continue and whether or not we are going to continue to feel bad and to feel anxious and feel depressed, or whether or not we are going to make a decision and finally take charge of our lives with or without help and make decisions that are actually good for us. So think about it in your lives, in your relationships. Are you being good to yourself? And if you are not, if you find that for the most part you are not, that you are self-sabotaging yourself, your life, and your relationships, let's try to figure out, and we can figure this out together, all of the things that you actually need to do to make some positive changes. You know, I was reading the New York Times this morning, and I actually was reading an article in the business section, you know, that I thought was really interesting to share with you. The headline was, Hallmark apologizes for pulling the ad. So listen to this. Hallmark apologized on Sunday after facing days of backlash for pulling four television ads that featured brides kissing. So, in a statement, the president of Hallmark said that they had received many emails from people who were extremely upset, and that they had, and I thought this was really interesting, that Hallmark had been agonizing. They were agonizing over the decision whether or not they should be featuring gay couples, gay brides who were kissing. And what made them change their minds? They said that they were deeply troubled. They were deeply, deeply troubled by the backlash. But I think that for Hallmark, of course, it was about money. It was about money. And they got a lot of backlash from the LGBTQ communities. And so they made a decision. They made a decision that they were going to reinstate the ad. So you see, social movements can have a tremendous amount of impact. You know, you sometimes wonder, you know, is an email or a march or getting arrested, is that going to really make a difference? But I think we're seeing that there's certainly a lot of transformation that has occurred when it comes to LGBTQ. And even though, and it was very interesting in this piece, that even though there was a lot of upset, from the Conservative American Family Association that defines its mission. I mean, this is really not what the Bible and what Christianity is really all about, in my opinion. So they were very upset. Is the fight against indecency? Well, we're going to have to get used to the fight against indecency, and hopefully people, as we are moving forward, are going to become more and more and more tolerant of the fact that this is no longer a society where we're just going to be looking at straight people getting married. It's not just about gays and straight. We have a whole continuum now of people who are defining themselves in a variety of different ways. And I think that we have to take all of this serious, because there was another piece in the New York Times, the headline being the flu fluidity of gender, language, and the human experience. And this is a piece by Dan Levin. And he starts by saying, Marta Peters had always known that she liked both boys and girls. But growing up, she had no interest in actually kissing anyone. She had trouble relating to her friends when they talked about their crushes, and she could not to relate to movies in which characters jumped into bed all together. So what did she learn? And I think that there was more to the fact that she was asexual than she may have understood at the time. But she said that she learned about asexuals who do not experience sexual attraction and gender dysphoria in the distressed people when they when their gender identity is different than the sex that they were assigned. So we're in a whole new, different world now, where we're finally being able to talk about all of the various different gender issues. And really, we're talking more and more about the fluidity of gender. And Miss Peters, who recently graduated from Penn State University today, she identifies as biromantic and demisexual. So what does that mean? She says that she can fall in love with more than one gender, but does not experience any sexual attraction unless she has first formed a strong emotional bond. Well, I think a lot of people are like that, whether or not they're gay or straight, that they do not feel able to really let themselves go sexually unless they're feeling a strong emotional connection. And I think it's just a really positive thing that we are finally learning. I think we have a long, long way to go to really be able to just live and let live. And things are complicated. I know that in my practice in Providence, I had an opportunity to treat two trans people. One was a man who was going through the process of becoming a woman, and of course it involved surgeries and hormones. And this was a man who was actually a graduate student at Brown University, whose parents had completely rejected and completely abandoned him, and thought the whole thing was nonsense. And he was basically going through this process alone. And so she, I said he, but really, she needed a lot of support. And I was working with her in therapy, and she met a man. Well, the man was actually a young woman who was going through the process of becoming a man. I mean, who would have thought? And these two, they were able to offer each other an enormous amount of support. And the young girl who was going through the process of becoming a man, she had an enormous amount of family support, which of course really made all the difference in the world. And they dated for a while, and at least they had each other. So that we need to be open. We need to be open to differences. We need to be open to possibilities. And I think that we need to be open to just not trying to put people in a particular kind of a box. And I think that, the fact that Hallmark now, that their ads, that they're showing, gay people getting married, and that you can go to the stores and you can buy cards that for gays who are getting married, for trans people who are getting married, I think that this is a really positive thing for all of us, that we are allowing ourselves, hopefully, to be open to differences and to be open to possibilities and to not be afraid. And I think that so much of what happens is that when people really respond strongly against change and against differences, in my experience, it has a great deal to do actually with fear. We don't know. We don't quite know how to react to things that are not familiar to us. But the way things are going, I think that we are going to have less and less choice in being able to just hide away and stop denying the reality that, as Shakespeare said, that there are many more things, in life that are beyond our understanding and that are beyond our considerations. Well, there was changing a little from sexual fluidity and gender fluidity. there was a piece in the Times that I thought was a really good piece about career change. And this was written by Tim Herrera. What to consider when thinking about a career change. And it's important. This is an important piece. Because here again, he begins his article asking the same question that I ask you every single week. Are you doing what you actually want to be doing? Maybe or maybe not. Who knows? It's one of the toughest questions that we are going to grapple with in our lives. But seriously, when was the last time that you were completely honest with yourself and thought about it? And if you're like most people, probably not recently. And he goes on to say, he says, I'm a big believer in evaluating where you think you are in your life about once a year. Well, I used to do this once a year. And of course, now I ask you to do this every single week, whether or not you're thinking about your relationships or whether or not you're thinking about your family, your career, or your job. And it could be a birthday, it could be New Year's, it could be some other significant date for you, but one of the things that he found is the number of people who waited until some significant tragedy in their lives, that they got sick or someone they know got sick, or if they suffered a loss, and suddenly that was the impetus they needed to reevaluate their lives. Well, I have found this absolutely to be the case when people call me for therapy. In all of the years, I cannot think of anybody who has ever called and said, Beatty, I need help with communication and problem-solving skills. There is always a crisis, whether it's a loss, whether or not there are physical problems, before people really get to a point where they are going to reach out, at least in my world of psychotherapy, and ask for help. And I think that this is exactly what happens in our careers as well. Because when you think about this, a full-time worker is going to spend roughly about 80,000 hours at work over the course of our working life. I mean, that is a tremendous amount of time. And setting aside the fact that that can account for a majority of our waking hours, consider the intangible costs. Because if you happen to be in the wrong career, that could mean tens of thousands of hours spent devoted to something that you don't even really care about. And then, of course, life goes by. It goes by very, very quickly. But I want you to know, and what this article is showing, is that passion alone, passion about your career, passion alone isn't necessarily the best indicator of whether you are in the right career. And sometimes it can lead you down the wrong path. But one of the factors that might be a deciding one is thinking about your values. Yes, it's not just about the money. It's not just about paying the rent, but about your values. Because in a broad sense, just think about this. We all have a set of core values that help to define us. Maybe you put a priority on achievement, helping others, doing good, having structure in your life, or just plain happiness. So whatever your core values may be, putting time into genuine, honest introspection to figure them out. I mean, how many people do you know who will say, I absolutely hate going into the office, but I have a mortgage, I have a family, I have kids? And how many people do you know, and I happen to be one of these very, very fortunate people, who has always loved what I do, because they absolutely, it absolutely coincides with my core values of loving people and helping people. But if you've never put much thought into it, you know, one helpful way to identify your values is to stop asking why questions, like, why do I feel so terrible? Instead, start asking what questions, like, what are the situations that make me feel terrible, and what do they have in common? You know, it may seem like an insignificant word swap, but you might be surprised at the different answers you arrive at or how those answers have changed over time. Now, remember too, and I think a lot of people, we get caught into this. Your job title isn't your identity. Now, our work identities are so wrapped up with our personal identities that we sometimes fail to differentiate between the two. And that is a trap that can keep people in careers that really don't make them happy. Because certain job titles come with certain connotations and assumptions, and leaving one role for another can shake a person's identity and confidence to their core. But instead of trying those connotations to the person, this Mr. Markman suggests looking at job titles a different way. All right, so when you go to a party, and of course, that's almost the first thing that people will say is, what do you do? And because of that belief that it tells us something deep about who they are, well, sometimes that's true, and sometimes that is absolutely not true at all. And you have to remember this, that your job title does not define you as a person. It's just one slice of your identity, and swapping out one for another does not change the core of who you actually are. And then, of course, there's, you know, the question of, do we pursue happiness or do we pursue money? And hopefully you're going to be able to do both. And unfortunately, nobody can answer that except you. You know, considerations like family and location and age and debt and mortgages, of course, these are things that we actually need to think about. But the studies show, and I thought that this was a really, really interesting study finding, that once people, and just think about this, listen to this, that once people reach a salary of about $75,000, okay, their level of happiness does not change, okay? So if you're looking at, you know, thinking about changing a career, and if you're really looking at your core values, and if you're looking at how much time you're spending at a career that is really not in your best interest, that is really not something that coincides with who you are and with your core values, then, of course, it is time to figure out what are you going to do about this. And, you know, it really involves being honest with oneself, whether it's about your relationship, whether it is about your job, whether it is about how, in fact, you are living your life. And being honest sometimes is very, very difficult. And yet, you know, life does. It goes by very, very quickly. And one needs to take the time. One needs to stop and take the time and be introspective and ask themselves some really, really tough questions. Otherwise, you could really just kind of continue on this path. And there is no need, I believe, to continue on a path of discontent. But making changes, it takes a lot of guts and it takes a lot of risk. And we don't, of course, always get exactly what we want. But it is about being honest, and it is about being truthful to oneself and to our partners and to people who we are engaging with and people who we have relationships within our life. So I want you to really, think about this. So it's not just about careers. It's about looking at the gestalt of our lives and asking ourselves, are we living our lives in a way that are really in our best interest? And what do we do? What do we do to free ourselves if the answer is no? Now, naturally, you can't tackle all of these different things all at one time. And this is where, if you're looking at your relationships, that's one part of life. And you're going to have to figure out what you're going to do if things are not going well. Then you're looking at your career and figuring out, do I need to go back to school? What is the impact on myself, on my family, on my sense of self-esteem going to be if I leave what people perceive as a very important and very lucrative and, in quotes, successful career? So there are a lot of things in life that we really need to ponder. But I believe that there is no need, whether or not we're talking about personal issues or whether or not we're talking about professional issues, we don't need to do this on our own. And I'm a real advocate of coaches. I'm a real advocate, of course, of finding good people who you can trust in your various different endeavors, who will be able to advise you, and get you to think about possibilities that you may never have been able to think about on your own. So think about this, whether or not you need to make a change in your career, or whether or not you need to make any other changes in your life. And I think it really is about slowing down, because we get very, very involved in the quick paced way of life, and we're stressed and we're tired and we've got all of these different things and we're multitasking and we're on the computers and we're looking at how many likes and we're looking at Facebook and we're looking at social media. But in the final analysis, we need to simplify things, and we are able to simplify things by slowing down and really being honest with ourselves about the kinds of life that we want to live, and subsequently the kinds and types of changes that we all need to make. With holiday time around the corner, a lot of people are really struggling, and it is not a happy time for a lot of people, particularly people who don't have families, or for people who may be estranged from their families. And there were a couple of articles on estrangement that I really wanted to share with you. And I know that when I was growing up as a child in Winnipeg, I didn't know anybody who was estranged from their family. Of course, at that time, I didn't know anybody who was divorced. So it was, growing up, perhaps, in retrospect, in a kind of a bubble. But apparently, family estrangement is a lot more common than we think. So that if you're about to ask a friend or a colleague whether they are going home for the holidays, you might need to think twice about it. Because the holidays are so often, when you think about it, tied to family and tangled in questions of going home are not always so happy when you are estranged from a parent or child. They're even more difficult when well-meaning types push you to bury the hatchet for the sake of peace in this theoretically joyous season. So again, nobody ever really knows what goes on behind closed doors. So when we talk about estrangement, what do we mean? Christina Sharp, who's an assistant professor at Utah State University and the director of the Family Communications Lab, has published extensively about parent-child estrangement. She defines estrangement as occurring when at least one family member voluntarily and intentionally distances himself or herself from another because of an ongoing negative relationship. And she notes that estrangement is complicated for the people experiencing it. And let me just say, this is why every single week here on the Ask Beatty Show, and certainly in my private practice here in New York City and in East Hampton, I encourage everybody that when there are problems in the relationship, to not put the problems in a drawer or under a carpet. Because if we do not deal, the consequences can really be dire and they can end up in estrangement. So even though it may be difficult to talk with your parents or talk with your children or talk with your siblings about things that are bothering you, things that are not working, things that are depressing you, things that make you angry, things that are disappointing you, it is just so critical that we all find the time and the words and the way and the communication and the problem-solving skills to deal with our issues head on. And if we don't do this, it's not like the problems are going to disappear on their own, but they are going to continue to linger, they are going to continue to exacerbate, and the results can be estrangement, where people actually make a clean break, where parents, children may never speak to each other again. So that when things come up, it is just so important, with help, without help, to find a way to discuss, to negotiate, to make trade-offs, and try to come to a win-win resolution. Because estrangement, it's not simply needing to distance yourself from a parent and not coming home for the holidays one year, okay? It's not. There's a difference. There's a real big difference between wanting a hiatus or wanting space for a while and deciding that your life would be better off without them. Now, naturally, you know, if you're looking at abusive situations and where you're finding that the person who is the abuser is not willing to look at him or herself and that the abuse is going to continue, I mean, you would never want to continue to put yourself in a situation where there was abuse of any kind, whether there was disrespect of any kind, whether we're talking about verbal or emotional or physical or sexual. But I have found that in most situations, at least certainly the situations that I have dealt with in my practice, of course, having said that, these are people who are hopefully wanting to try to resolve issues, that if there is really caring, if there is really a strong desire that the people have to try to work things out, even though we can't change anything that happened in our past, that people are able to really move forward. But of course, there needs to be a desire. both people, whether or not we're talking about a parent-child relationship or whether we're talking about a romantic relationship, a marital relationship, a dating relationship. I mean, unless you have two people who are serious and care enough to try to see whether or not the relationship and the issues can be worked out, then we can't do this. We can't certainly do this on our own. But there's a question of how does the estrangement actually happen? And Dr. Bryant notes that estrangement is not usually a mutual process, and the circumstances depend on who is doing the estranging, because there's an idealized image of what families are like. And again, nobody ever knows what really goes on behind closed doors. And it's a reminder now that the family is broken, and they worry that maybe they themselves are broken. Because with adult children, it is often based on prolonged psychologically damaging interactions, mistreatment, abuse, or just indifference with their parents. And they finally get to a point, and it's a good thing, because again, nobody should be living in a situation where there is mistreatment or abuse or indifference, so that these people are finally able, the adult children typically, are finally able to get to a point where they have the fortitude to put some distance between themselves or sever that relationship. And I have, you know, I have a couple of people in my private practice, one woman in particular, who grew up in a very, very emotionally, physically, and sexually abusive family. And she has tried, she's really, really tried over the years to see whether or not there can be an acknowledgement, her father is no longer alive, whether or not her mother can acknowledge that she was not there, that she used to beat her, that she looked the other way when her father was sexually abusing her. And yet this mother is, and I've had the mother come in, and we've been trying to see whether or not there would be a way for this relationship to be able to be mended in some fashion. But this mother is completely in denial. And she continues still to this day to blame her daughter and actually accuse her daughter, her adult daughter, of making all of these stories up. So in a situation like this, it is not possible. It is not possible for reconciliation of any kind to take place. And I know about a year ago, we took a breather, and the daughter, I mean, the mother is getting older, and the daughter is basically alone in her life right now. She doesn't have a partner. She doesn't really have any family at all. So we gave it another shot just to see. The daughter reached out. She reached out, had the courage to do this and ask her mother to come into her therapy session. But the mother continues. The mother continues. It's interesting. She protests. She protests everything, basically, that her daughter has said about what went on and what did not go on as a child growing up. She continues to put her down, but at the same time, she tells her how much she loves her. So it is really, really crazy making. And I'm in complete support with the daughter that this is too crazy a relationship, too toxic a relationship, and that she really needs to continue to be estranged from her mom. So there are situations in life where reconciliation and working things out is simply not possible. We do the best that we can. But in the final analysis, if there are not two people willing to be able to honestly look at the reality of a situation and are willing to apologize, make amends, and move forward, then what options do we have? And as I have said to you every week, for me, zero toxicity in one's life is the only way that will keep us free and will keep us happy and healthy. And that means oftentimes having to extricate ourselves from family members as well. Well, everybody, I am looking at the clock here in the studio at the Progressive Radio Network, and I can hardly believe that another hour has actually come and gone. And a couple weeks, we're going to be right in the midst of Christmas and holidays, but I am planning to be here every Monday. Actually, I want to be here every Monday for the next 25 years, assuming that the Progressive Radio Network is going to be alive and well, and I have every confidence that certainly that's going to happen.